The Philippines still ranks in the top 10 most dangerous countries in the world for journalists. Time and again, we hear news about journalists being harassed by various powerful entities, leading to persecutions and even death. Along with this precarity, the last decade has also seen the changing landscape of the practice of journalism with the rise of social media and the post-truth world leveling accusations of bias and fake news against media outlets. In the current historical moment we find ourselves in, how do we better nuance our conversation about the relationship between media and politics?
Challenges to press freedom.
The place of media in a democracy.
Role of media in speaking truth to power.
Hindi na bago yan. Hi, I am Lee Candelaria.
I am Vekal Porha.
This is Aaron Maliari and you are listening to podcast Conversations in Philippine History, Politics, and Society.
A biased CBN. Dalawan. Fake news, di ba? Ilang beses nating narinig yung mga paratang na yan, lalo na in the last 6 years. And as mentioned in the introduction, this adds to the already precarious conditions that journalists in the Philippines find themselves in.
Totoo ito. Kaya naman for this episode, we will talk about the relationship between media and politics, lalo in light of the coming elections in the Philippines.
And I think this is also somewhat very close to our hearts, ano? Kasi like history, journalism has been the subject of discrediting dun nga sa context na tinatawag ng post-truth era, where even established and verified facts and long-standing practices of finding information and determining truth claims are being attacked and, well, discredited.
Totoo ito. And if our listeners would remember, I shared in the very first episode of podcast that I even started my college life wanting to be in journalism. So yung notion talaga sa akin ng dalawang field na yan, in doing research and presenting facts, magkalapit talaga.
I agree. And even what we do here in podcast, diba? Syempre, we are sharing our insights and sharing historical knowledge through a media platform. We are taking advantage of podcast platforms and YouTube and our website na rin to communicate our ideas. So, parang magkapatid talaga yung journalism at history, no? If I know, part pa kayo ng school newspaper noong high school. Ako, associate editor ako.
True, feature editor. Diba? As, you know, bida-bida.
Okay. Yeah, I agree, no? So as we try to talk about the relationship between media and politics or the role of media in politics, we had a conversation with Ayi Makaraig, who is currently working as a lecturer at the University of Amsterdam. Ayi may be very familiar to our listeners kasi she used to be a journalist for the ABS-CBN News Channel, ANC. Then she also worked for Agence France-Presse, AFP, before she pursued and completed her master's degree on media and politics through an Erasmus Mundus program in Europe.
So talagang yung insights ni Ayi will be both coming from her own experience as a journalist and also from an academic perspective, having studies in the field.
Nice. So first, we asked Ayi the general question about the role of media in politics. And this is what she shared.
For me and for many journalists that I talk to, for my colleagues, the role of the media in politics and democracy really is what we call the fourth estate. So that means the media is the watchdog of people in power. So to translate that, it basically means we hold power accountable. So that's why journalists report about corruption, human rights abuses, any issue that is of public interest. So we want to make sure that people we elect, they live up to their promises, they live up to standards of honesty, integrity, they don't steal our taxpayers' money, they follow the law, they pay taxes. That's the role of the journalist, to call out this wrongdoing through reporting, especially investigative reporting is important in this watchdog role. That's very important for our country because, as we know, institutions are weak. They are not that well developed. So the media serves another role of this check and balance function of being in a democracy where branches of government check each other. So the media as the watchdog also serves as another check of power.
So important na i-highlight dito yung media as the fourth estate, ika nga. So bilang mahalagang institusyon para sa pagbabantay sa pamahalaan in the interest of the public. Napakahalaga ng papel ng media sa pagsigurado na mayroong sapat na impormasyon ng publiko tungkol sa kung ano ang nagaganap sa bayan, lalo na sa mga nangyayari sa gobyerno or sa pamahalaan.
Totoo ito. Kaya nga mahalaga rin itong ipaalala sa mga mamamayan na ang media may importanteng papel talaga sa demokrasya. At mahaba nga ang kasaysayan niyan. Mula pa sa panahon ng kolonyalismo halimbawa, yung mga kilalang personalidad sa paglaban para sa pagbabago noong panahon ng mga Espanyol like sina Rizal, Del Pilar, Luna, Haina. Kung maaalala natin, periodismo ang isang nakitang paraan para kundinahin ang mga katiwalian sa kolonyal na pamahalaan at mangampanya na rin para sa reforma.
That's right. At yan din ay isang halimbawa ng pagsupil sa press freedom yung naranasan ni Rizal sa La Solidaridad, di ba? I mean, Rizal was executed, di ba? So, and his peers also experienced persecution. Kaya rin ang mapaniil na patakaran ng Estado laban sa media, hindi na bago yan, ika nga natin sa season na to. Kahit noong panahon ng mga Amerikano, halimbawa, maalala natin yung tungkol sa published essay na Aves de Rapina o yung Birds of Prey na lumabas sa dyaryong El Renacimiento noong 1908. Isa yung article na tungkol sa pagpatutsada sa corruption sa colonial government noon. Ang nangyari, dinimanda ni Dean Worcester yung dyaryo for libel. At ito yung naging dahilan para mabankrupt at eventually even makulong yung mga tao behind the El Renacimiento, including Teodoro Calaw.
Which speaks of the power of media, no? In my own master's thesis nga eh, ang focus ko ay Japanese period naman, yung World War II, at talagang malaki ang papel na ginampanan ng media, lalo na sa Japanese propaganda. Isa yan sa mga sinecure nila eh. Kinuha nila yung offices ng mga newspapers, particularly yung Tribune, noong panahon na yon, para maging launchpad ng kanilang propaganda and what they plan to do. And this propaganda, of course, roughly translates to what we call nowadays as fake news.
At syempre, nung martial law, di ba? Isa rin ang media sa mga talagang target ng authoritarian regime ni Ferdinand Marcos. Kaya, you know, yung mga claim na maganda ang buhay noong martial law, tahimik ang lipunan noong martial law na sinasabi lagi ng mga boomers na kiniklaim nila madalas, maaaring sa perspective nila, totoo yun. Kasi ang nababasa lang naman nila sa dyaryo, mga good news about the dictatorship, about sa batas militar. Kasi syempre, ang taas ng level ng censorship, di ba? Sa kontekstong yun. Kaya rin, during that time, may pushback through mga renegade publications at yung mga tinatawag na mosquito press in order to reveal the atrocities and corruption of martial law and of the Marcos regime.
That's right. So, time and again, malinaw ang power ng media at complicated relationship nito with the state. Pero in the last decade, hindi na lang ito ang context na kinailangang galawan ng media at journalism. We all know how social media had tremendous impact in the way we communicate and consume content. So, we also asked Ayi about her insights on the impact of social media to journalism.
So definitely the rise of social media has totally changed the landscape. It is a major change, if not one of the most important changes in the last decade or recent decades. Because before the advent of social media, there was that thinking that journalism, so as you call it, traditional media now as we know it, so that's your, say, mainstream TV channels, TV Patrol, remember yung golden age of TV Patrol, Hoy Gising, very, you know, I mean, these are brands, are shows familiar to us, for example. Before, during that time, traditional journalism, were regarded as gatekeepers of news. We decide what people get to read as news or get to watch as news, what are the most important issues of the day. And as you know, of course, now with social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, that has changed because the power has shifted increasingly to the users. social media users, and I would also have to point out the platforms. So Facebook, they are now actually regarded as the new gatekeepers because it's through these platforms, social media platforms now, that we consume news. When something breaks, for instance, when initially last year, right, when Bongo decided to run for president, I mean, things like that. These news stories now break on Twitter or on social media. It's not anymore that we will hear about it on TV Patrol first or read about it the next day from the Philippine Daily Inquirer. That has changed. So it has totally changed the landscape in terms of the influence and power. And also another problem, the spread of disinformation or fake news, because nowadays, many people tend to believe immediately what they see on social media as the truth, as the source of truth, and that becomes contested, whereas before, we would just say, listen to Ted Filon or Lauren Legarda, even before that, and like traditional journalists, and we would believe that as, say, the truth or reality, but that's not the case. Chat apps, for instance, our Viber groups where your titos and titas are believing all these wrong information or commonly regarded as fake news. So that has totally changed. So in terms of the influence of the media to decide what is news, that has changed. And also the spread of disinformation and misinformation, what we regard as fake news. So those are the two big consequences of the rise of social media.
So yung dating established role ng quote-unquote traditional media as gatekeepers of news, nayanig with social media at na-threaten pa nga with disinformation. We have an episode on disinformation and fake news with Jonathan Ong in this current season also. So maybe our audience should check that out as well.
Yeah, and aside from fake news, we also mentioned even in our previous episodes na isang malaking factor din sa current challenges to democracy na nai-experience hindi lang ng Pilipinas, no, kundi maging ng ibang bansa ay yung tinatawag na rise of populist leaders. And in the Philippines, the past 6 years of Duterte, this is a major testament to how populist discourse leveled attacks against the media. And here is what Ayi had to say about this.
Okay, maybe I preface this as the first half of the Duterte presidency, the first 3 years, I was working as a journalist. So I was experiencing this personally as a journalist. The second half of the Duterte presidency is when I did my master's. So that's where I put on my academic hat because my thesis was precisely about this topic of the attacks on the media under the Duterte presidency. So in my study and in my experience, populist leaders like our President Rodrigo Duterte tend to use this label of fake news against traditional journalism or mainstream journalists in particular, like other populist leaders around the world, to discredit them, to undermine the media. And we have seen that. We have seen that there's a specific instance, for instance, where he called Pia Ranada of Rappler fake news in a press conference. And of course, you have also seen him outrightly saying he would not renew the franchise of ABS-CBN. And, you know, we have all seen his speeches insulting the owners of the Inquirer, ABS-CBN, and also journalists at Rappler. So it has happened in the past 6 years, and it's also not isolated to the Philippines. So it is used as a tool. So that's basically the tactic, the strategy of many populist leaders, one, to rally their base, because they thrive on the grievances of people, say, against these mainstream media, the term oligarchs, right? Because some media owners are indeed corporate owners. They have many other businesses. So in that sense, thriving on the grievances of that aspect, but also to discredit, and it's important to point out, critical media outlets. Outlets who have, say, reported critically on his war on drugs, on his main policies, or on his administration, his decisions. So it is these outlets who have been the target or the most direct targets of his attacks.
Sobrang ironic talaga yung nangyari na yung fake news ginagamit ng trolls at ng populist leaders to discredit media outlets. And one major event na nangyari sa Pilipinas noong 2020 proved to be, you know, a major inflection point sa tense relationship between Duterte and media. At ito nga, yung pagde-deny ng prangkisa sa ABS-CBN, sa pinakamalaking network sa Pilipinas. You know? And we asked Ayi about the impact of these to journalism practice and profession in the Philippines.
Definitely, it has a wide-ranging impact. So that was 2020. The immediate impact that we really saw was layoffs, no? So disclosure, I mentioned earlier, I used to work for ANC, which is the ABS-CBN news channel, the cable channel of ABS-CBN. So I know, for instance, some of my former colleagues and their colleagues were laid off because that meant big loss of revenue for ABS-CBN because the free channel was really their main source of income. So one, many journalists or many people who work in the news department and beyond in different departments of ABS-CBN were laid off. Two, in terms of press freedom, it sent what we call a major chilling effect in the media industry in the Philippines because ABS-CBN prior to that moment, as we know, was the giant, the largest media corporation across the board, across all media platforms in the Philippines. And it sent this message that if this could happen to ABS-CBN, which was unthinkable prior to that moment, unthinkable because it was a very powerful network, this can happen. All the more can you imagine what can happen to smaller media outlets, independent media outlets, or individual journalists. So it sent that chilling effect. And this is also a finding of my thesis. Like, the journalists themselves admitted that. Like, that is really a big warning. It raised and caused a lot of fear for the other journalists and the other media companies. But also, I have to point out, it became a rallying point because many journalists really, despite all the threats and the odds, you know, felt they had to stand up for this and express their views in favor of press freedom. So unfortunately, it was a pandemic, but there were still, say, protests. You could see solidarity in the media industry, say, journalists from Rappler, the Inquirer had an editorial about it. So it also, in a way, rallied and galvanized the media industry that we have to stand for ABS-CBN. We have to stand against these kinds of attacks. So I would say it's such a major event, say, in the history of Philippine media, whose effects we continue to feel. And if you remember, after that, all the typhoons, there's always this issue, and you will always hear some politicians say, some of them, those who voted, you will hear them say, oh, if only ABS-CBN would cover this. Because that was another big impact, actually. They had to remove, in a way, that's not the right term, but the whole regional network group, we call RNG, was taken out because of the financial impact. So say your provincial reporters from different cities, because each city, major city in the Philippines, as we know, has an ABS-CBN office, right? Their own team, their own TV patrol even. So that was all gone after the franchise. Like, only individual, once in a while, reporters would stay. So up to today, we feel that impact.
Grabe, no? Isa talagang immediate impact, syempre yung pagkawala ng hanap buhay ng maraming empleyado. No,
dito sa gitna ng pandemya, no?
Exactly, no? Sa gitna ng pandemya. At yun ngang, syempre yung tinatawag na chilling effect, di ba? So, pero I like Ayi's reminder that it also became a rallying point for journalists and many citizens to really call out what happened, lalo na noong na-realize yung loss nung nangyari yung madaming bagyo.
And I think makikita pa rin natin yan hanggang ngayon, yung kakulangan sa impormasyon, lalo na sa mga malalayong lugar mula sa mga sentro na nakadepende talaga dati sa ABS-CBN for information, na lalo na ngayon na maraming mga sakon ng dumarating, no, sa Pilipinas sa panahon ngayon. Kawawa sila kasi wala silang source of information.
Yung mga nakaraang linggo sa Leyte, di ba? Yung landslide, ang daming namamatay pero hindi nabibigyang pansin sa mainstream media dahil sa pagkawala ng mga regional networks na to. So in light of these challenges, I think important yung research ni Ayi about how journalists responded. he or she shares what her research revealed. May na-identify siyang apat na strategies and responses ng mga journalists.
How did they feel? Many of them admitted, of course, they're outraged by the attacks, but also afraid because aside from the ones that we already mentioned, one main attack in the Philippines really is trolling. So trolling, in my finding, that's universal. All journalists nowadays practically experience that, and really mean, really severe kinds of rape threats, especially for female journalists, death threats. So of course I feel the impact of them. Some, there's a mental health impact, there's a safety impact. So they obviously are against this. So there's a feeling of fear, but also outrage of wanting to respond to that attack. And they feel for their colleagues who are experiencing similar attacks, if not worse attacks. So in terms of the feeling, yeah, it's a mix of being afraid, being outraged, wanting to stand up for yourself, wanting to fight back is a common theme. We want to fight back. We want to defend press freedom. So that's the feeling. In terms of strategy and response, so I identified in my study 4 main responses. So one is reinforcing and adapting reporting practices. So in terms of reporting strategies, that has changed. Those have changed under Duterte. So I'll give you an example from my respondent. So before, Philippine media in general, of course, not everyone, there was a tendency to be like, he said, she said, you know, like just reporting the facts, quote unquote. Today, Duterte said this, tomorrow, Duterte said another thing. So according to my respondents, the journalists, that has changed because they realized that, you know, with this information, with the president saying one thing and then the other, they have to call that out. So there has to be, for instance, live tweeting, right? So they have to do instant fact checking. If there's something that is not correct, they have to call that out because they feel the responsibility to their audience. So that's one. So there's a change in reporting practice, but also they feel they have to verify all the more. So part of journalism is a discipline of verification. So it comes with the job. But now that is heightened under Duterte because, again, the trolls will attack you immediately or the officials will call you out. This is wrong. Even if, you know, sometimes it's just an honest, innocent mistake. So all the more because of the pressure and the threat, they have to double, triple, quadruple check that the facts are correct. Another one is being more transparent because, as you know, the president was calling out ownership. Rappler is CIA or Rappler is, you know, funded by foreigners, Americans, for example, or ABS-CBN, the Lopezes, for instance. We saw Gabby Lopez testify right before Congress. So there were very specific accusations about ownership or the owners. So the journalists and the outlets felt they had to respond. And also I mentioned earlier, another strategy is solidarity. This is the third strategy. So, you know, media, its competition is very fierce. Normally, we just think within our own outlet. But with these attacks, there was a realization among the journalists that, no, we have to stand up as an industry. So you would see statements of solidarity, for instance, when the franchise issue of ABS-CBN came out, protests, they would go to ABS-CBN or protest for Rappler, or there would be this Black Friday press freedom protest. So solidarity is important. And lastly, advocating for press freedom. So for some journalists, they felt they had to take an activist role. Traditionally, some would just say, my role is to just disseminate news. That's it. I'm not an activist. That's not my job. But some felt that because press freedom is under threat and press freedom is necessary for journalism to exist, they had to take on an activist role and really stand up and vocalize their views about what was going on, attacks on the media. They said, you know, we have to say we are for ABS-CBN or for Rappler, whereas before you don't even mention that in your report. You just say, as reported in a major broadsheet. I mean, there is, again, competition. As reported in this news, well, you won't even mention the name, but now there's more of, yeah, again, solidarity and also being an activist for press freedom.
Ang ganda ng insights na ito from Ayi kasi we rarely hear yung side ng journalists na nakakatanggap ng persecution, no? And yung apat na na-point out also shows how the current context also changed the ways journalists went about their work and also how they view themselves in relation to what is unfolding.
Yeah, ako, I really like the third and fourth points about, you know, building solidarity and adopting a more activist stance. And we see this more and more nowadays, ano. Pero I think it is important to point out na hindi ibig sabihin ito na talagang biased na ang media.
Totoo, kasi as Ayi pointed out, challenge dito sa mga journalists mismo. Kasi how do you strike a balance between yung tinatawagan na objectivity and of course, your own personal political convictions? Pero diba nga, what is objectivity anyway? So, sa sharing ni Ayi, minention niya na one way to look at it is by looking at objectivity like a process. Meaning, it involves the openness and awareness about how information is obtained and also having a way to disclose or share this with your audience.
Very similar principles to sa history, ano? Impartiality to opposing views and being cognizant of one's position and letting the readers know the process by which information and conclusion is arrived at. I think yung ganitong rigor na nakikita natin sa journalism and history, good journalism and good history, if I may emphasize, yung kailangan nating mas ipalaganap to also remind ourselves and others about the practice of doing proper journalism and doing proper history.
Same na may proseso ang pagbuo ng historical fact. Ganun din sa journalism, di ba? Sabi nga, journalism is a discipline of verification. So talagang parang in history, like how we scrutinize sources and verify before we present our findings or before we even start analyzing nga eh.
In light of the many social media users that generate content that present current events and issues much like how traditional media does, we as consumers of this content need to also empower ourselves para naman ano, effectively ma-discern natin which are reliable and which are not.
That's right. So with the coming elections, we also of course asked Ayi about her thoughts on possible ways forward and also how we can surface media and politics as an important election issue.
The way forward. Well, definitely it's critical to see the next leader, the next president, the next administration's position on these media issues that we've discussed. So one critical issue definitely that will come up is the franchise still of ABS-CBN, because we do know that they were waiting for the next administration and already fully knowing that they were not successful in having the franchise renewed under the Duterte administration. I know and we know that they are waiting for this next leader to see if they could have that approved. So that's one major issue to watch out for. The way forward, I think, now that it's still campaign period, is to try to ask these candidates, what is your stand on these media issues? What is your position on press freedom issues? Like outright, will you support? Will you ask your congressional allies, because it's a congressional issue, will you ask your congressional allies to renew the franchise of ABS-CBN or not? So I think that's one of the election issues that we can pose to candidates. And I would say even just their behavior now as candidates or as politicians and their track record, you can see some of these clues there, like, are they open? Are they transparent? Do they attend debates? Do they respond to journalists' questions? Or do they only speak to journalists who are friendly to them, for example? Are they easily offended? Do they attack journalists who ask controversial questions? So we can see that. But the next 6 years, definitely the franchise renewal of ABS-CBN is one. And also the cases. There are still many pending cases against many journalists. Not just say journalists from Rappler. Journalists were imprisoned under this administration. We were talking earlier about cyber libel, for instance. That's one major issue. Are they going to repeal this law? Do they believe that cyber libel should exist? And for what specific, say, conditions or cases, circumstances should just it be? Or should any critical story be the subject of a cyber libel case? That's one. And even if you want to go, the criminalization of libel. So in the Philippines is one of the few remaining countries in the world where libel is a criminal offense, meaning you can get jailed for libel. The trend in other countries is to decriminalize libel, but we have journalists who are imprisoned or who face imprisonment for libel. So these are very important issues. And if there's anything the last 6 years has shown us in terms of media, is that these are important issues to talk about. These are important issues to raise to candidates. And we can ask them, but we can also ask the voters, observe already and assess how have they been conducting themselves in relation to these issues. Do they sue people who are critical against them? Are these valid cases? So things like that, I think, is very important. I know we have many issues to consider in the elections, not least the pandemic, but definitely this is one. And I think it's an indicator. If you want a candidate or a president who supports democracy or who will protect democracy or, you know, recover or improve Philippine democracy, then the media is one important pillar of democracy.
All right, I think that's a good way to end this episode. To highlight how press freedom is an important pillar in a democracy and thus also a very important election issue to talk about.
That's right. We would like to thank Ayi Makaraig for her thoughts and insights. You may follow her on Twitter at Ayi Makaraig. And of course, also follow us in our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn pages.
And also, please subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can also listen to our episodes, that podcast TV. And for the full interview with Ayi, head over to our website, that's www.podcast.com. So thank you for listening and have a good day.